This is a first for Project Cargo Weekly. We are interviewing our editor-in-chief, Bo H. Drewson. And so, Bo, why don't you give us an introduction to yourself briefly and let us know what got you into shipping in the first place.
Thank you, Cody. Yes, it's an honor to be here at, our own newsletter. And it's a bit strange to be reversely interviewed. Normally, I'm putting the questions to the interviewees. But of course, thank you for this. Well, basically, I started in shipping when I was 16 and a half in 1980, as they say, many kilos ago. I wanted to be a journalist, but my dad said, no, boy, that's not good for you. And since he was a retired sea captain, well, he is now retired. At that time, he was active in shipping. He got me a traineeship in a company in Aarhus, Denmark, and they were the sub-agents of Ben Line, which was a major ship owner, having container ships in the old days between Europe and Asia. So that's how I got into shipping, and I never looked back since.
So you started as a trainee in a shipping agency?
Yes, I did. As a trainee, you know, at least in those days, you were supposed to do make coffee for your bosses, go to the port with documents. But anyway, you learn it from the bottom up, not from up down. I went on board ships. I went to customs. I took care of imports from Far East coming in with Ben Line. So I had a pretty wide range of experiences that I learned from early days. Then I stayed there for about 3 years. After that, I went to the north of Denmark to get away from my first job. Because if you stay as a trainee, you kind of always will be looked at as a trainee. I stayed in the north of Denmark for about a year, and then I got back to Aarhus, and I got the offer to work for a company called Tryship. And Tryship in those days were owned by Claus Rickmers mainly, and two Danish partners. They represented COSCO, Sinotrans, and Toho Line, all the Chinese interests in Denmark. And I became the branch manager of Tryship. So hence my interest for Asia and particularly China.
Okay, what year was that when you started with Tryship?
That was in 1984. I started the branch office, and then I came to Beijing the first time in 1986. I was only 23 years old, so a slim version, you might say.
And how long did you continue with Tryship or Tryship?
Tryship I worked with until 1987, and then me and three partners put our heads together, and we convinced COSCO to allow us to establish a new company called Penta Shipping, and in order to take over the agency of COSCO in both Denmark and Sweden. So at that time, I also moved to Sweden. Since my mom is Swedish, it was natural for me to move up there. And not a problem language-wise. And I started Tryship in Stockholm as well. Then, or Penta Shipping, I should say, sorry. Tryship first, then Penta Shipping. And then in 1992, I moved to China and opened the Penta Shipping branch office in Beijing. And of course, everyone was looking at us. Why does a sub-agent of the Chinese state shipping line open an office in Beijing? But it was simply a matter of networking. Getting closer to your principal, and it's not what you know, it's who you know. And that's why we set up the office there. So then I came to Asia and I stayed on more or less in Asia for almost 20 years from 1992.
So what did you do after Penta Shipping?
Well, I decided to sell my shares in 95, and that was just before COSCO bought the company. And in 1995, then when I sold my shares, which was about 25%, I got some money out of that, of course. I traveled the world a bit and decided what I wanted to do. And I ended up, after some lengthy holiday, taking up a job with a company called Martin Bencher UK. And Martin Bencher UK I knew because they were one of the sub-agents of Penta Shipping when we had cargo in and out of the UK. Okay. So I moved to London. And worked there from 95 to 96, driving in the wrong side of the road, you know, and got along well with the owner, Arthur Devereaux, who was an Irish bloke who owned Martin Bencher, which was basically a project freight forwarding company, but mainly focusing on North America.
Okay. And when, at what point did you live in Hong Kong?
Well, basically, I actually never lived in Hong Kong physically. I do have a property in Hong Kong since some years, but I never actually lived there. But I did visit Hong Kong, and my first of many, I might say, ex-wives came from there, and met her in Hong Kong in, and got married in 87. And together we have two kids. One is 32 and one is 29. And so, yes, Asia has taken up quite a lot of my interest, both professionally and privately, you might say. And after about a year in London at Martin Bencher, I still wanted to do something with China. So I had some pints of beer in the pub with the owner back then at Martin Bencher UK. And I suggested him whether he would allow me to open together with a colleague of mine and a partner of mine, Peter Jensen, to open Martin Bencher Scandinavia. And after these six, seven pints, he said, all right. And then Martin Bencher Scandinavia was established originally in Stockholm, Sweden, in 1997, with a share capital of $5,000. So that's really quite a fantastic history, if you think back. And I then spent 15 years with Martin Bencher as the CEO. And together with Peter Jensen, we were equal partners in the company. I was mainly the one running around the world, finding contacts and was staying in Asia most of the time, both China, Indonesia, Malta. I also lived in Finland for a while and in Sweden, but mainly in Asia. And then ultimately in the year, what was it? Let me think now, 10 years ago, the year 2012, after 15 years in Martin Bencher, I suggested Peter that if he was willing to buy me out, because I was tired and traveling takes its toll, both professionally and privately, as many can tell you. But it was fantastic.
So that's your up to the most current career history, right?
Yeah, you can say so. I mean, 2012, after I sold my shares, of course, I could perhaps start playing golf. But I mean, golf is overrated and reading is overrated. You can only do that for about a month at a time. Then you start to get itchy and you have to kind of get back in gear. So I thought about what to do at that time. And I thought to myself, well, I want to be in shipping, but I don't want to have the stress of booking cargo, visiting customers, entertaining them to the early hours, even though it was fun for a while. So I thought, I know a lot of people. They don't know each other. Why don't I become the linchpin for making them get to know each other and letting them join my club? And at that time, it was starting to become modern to have networks. And the old saying about it's not what you know, it's who you know, became again evident for me. So I started together with two partners a network called CLC Projects. And CLC is the abbreviation of China Logistics Club. And that idea was not mine. It was a Danish guy who is now regrettably deceased called Henrik, living in Hong Kong, who had a company called China Logistics Club. And we were good friends. And I told him, why don't we make a club where we focus on project cargo? That means oversized and OOG cargo, where you need special ships. And he said, yes, good idea. Then after a short time, he wanted to continue on to other alleys with his own logistics club and also some trading. So I said, okay, I'll buy you out. And since then, I was the major shareholder of CLC Projects together with two partners. One based in the Philippines, which is your good self, and one based in Austria, Vienna. And we are right now in the CLC Projects group. We are about 240 members in 135 countries worldwide. We even have come as far as we have invited service providers to join our network. That means ship owners such as Hoag Lines, Hapag-Lloyd, and others as they service the forwarders. So networking is what I do now. It's a lot less stress. Of course, it's also a lot less income, but it keeps, let's say, the debt collector away from the door and pays the bills. So yes, I'm happy with it.
Okay, thank you for that quick summary of your long shipping background. So all in all, how many countries would you say that you lived in since you started in shipping?
I think I lived in between 10 to 12 different countries. I traveled about 220 days a year for a period of not less than 15 years. And I did the math, I did the summary, asking my travel agent in Denmark, who I've been using for almost 30 years, called Marine Travel, as they cater for seafarers. And I travel with my Seaman's Book, which I have. And they told me that when we had started, when we go back to the Martin Bencher days, there was a period between 2001 and 2003. I was nowhere more than 3 weeks for two years. And that's quite a feat when you look at it. It's quite scary. So I should have some frequent flyer points by all means with most airlines now.
You don't get frequent miles on ships, do you? Otherwise, you would have a lot of those.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing I can add. People, of course, ask me, but Bo, what do you do for holiday? Well, I don't do something completely different. I travel by cargo ships. And that's one of the things that I really like. I've taken cargo ships ever since 2005, about once a year. And now I've agreed with my fourth and final wife, in order to make sure that she sticks with me, that I only go every 2 years. So the last trip I had was in 2019 from Singapore to Melbourne on CMA CGM. And 2 years prior to that, I went from Malta to Busan, where my daughter joined. And this next year, I'm going to go from Hamburg to Cape Town. So that's my way of relaxing, reading books and enjoying the scenery. But I should also point out that in 3 or 4 years ago, we started a newsletter called Project Cargo Weekly. And of course, my reason for being here and you interviewing me is to have reverse roles. And we are now reaching about 39,000 people worldwide on a weekly basis with our newsletter.
And I just have another question about the traveling by container ship. How many days normally is a trip like that?
Well, it depends. You can take all kinds of routes. There are shorter routes, of course, and there are longer routes. It all depends on what does the wife allow you to do. I'm allowed 1 month away every two years. So I make sure, of course, to be away exactly not less than 31 days. But generally speaking, you can travel around the world, which, of course, are 2-3 months. You can do short haul, for example, like Hamburg to Malta, which is 11 days. So there are all kinds of possibilities for people who'd like to get away from the stress. I mean, I believe me and many others, they don't find that being on a cruise ship with 4,000 other people is a holiday. So you want solitude, peace and quiet to read books and away from the internet and everyday hassle of being online, then cargo ship is definitely something I can recommend. People always say, but what do you do there? Isn't it boring? Well, the first prerequisite for you in order to have a good trip is, of course, that you are able to be with yourself. There might not be other passengers. The crew has their job to do. Of course, you're welcome to visit the bridge anytime you want. So yeah, if you're into shipping and so on, it could be a ship like the one you have on your background. It could be one of those, for example, if they have a passenger cabin, and you eat together with the crew. And I certainly didn't lose weight because of this. So the food on board is good and you see different places. But I would say some of these trips are also features in the newsletter that I publish now every Thursday. And it's a funny thing, but as I said in the beginning, I wanted to be a journalist and got into shipping. Now, finally, I convinced my father that was a good idea, and now I am into journalism, after all.
Yeah, very, very specific journalism in project-related shipping and forwarding.
Yeah, definitely. And we publish every Thursday. It's a neutral newsletter. And I interview anyone, not even people, let's say, are competitors officially to our network. But I believe everyone should have a fair chance. And we don't take any favors. We only allow 4 banner ads in each newsletter. So anyone who wish to place an ad is welcome, but we only allow 4. So it's not like an IKEA catalog filled with ads like you see many other news outlets, half of it is advertising before you get to anything interesting. And then when it's about shipping, it's mainly statistics about who bought this and who bought that. It's not really news, in my opinion.
Yeah. So mainly you're focused on interviews in PCW, correct?
Yes. I have normally three interviews every Thursday. They can be written interviews. They can be Zoom interviews like we do now. And then I have shipping news, trade intel, where I mention a few contracts that I signed between customers worldwide, which might be useful for ship owners or forwarders. And then, of course, featured pictures and video of the week. All quite light reading, and the editorial, where I have my own personal opinions, and they are not always politically correct, which is good to see these days, because a lot of news media is very, very colored. So that's it. It's become pretty popular. And as I said, reaching some 39,000 people every week. It doesn't mean 39,000 people are reading it. I wish, but that may be in the future.
Well, we also do have these video interviews, so people can also watch and listen. That's also a good addition that has a side effect of COVID.
Yes, of course. I mean, speaking of COVID, we all tired of that now. We have the new Omicron or whatever it's called. And I'm sure next week there'll be another one, Delta Force or whatever. It seems to be endless. And I think we need a long-term strategy to come to grips with this COVID. Or we need to realize that it's here to stay and we have to live with it. I think everyone is tired of this. And definitely face-to-face can never be replaced by Zoom or Teams.
Okay, is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I think I've actually come to the conclusion. I should also be careful not to be too long-winded. I always try to, when I am the interviewer, I always make sure not to become too long-winded. So I want to say thank you for this opportunity to be on the other side of the table, so to speak. It's quite... It teaches me a lot how my own interviewees are feeling.
Well, thank you for coming up with this idea to turn the tables and put you on the hot seat. Although I didn't ask you any difficult questions, really.
No. At least you seem more friendly than some of my ex-wife's lawyers. So this was a pleasure, Cody. So thank you very much.